Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley is with me, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Chicago. Padres, three games, Wrigley Field, facing some pretty good pitchers. We'll get into it. But of course, Ryan, I always ask you where you want to start. I think I know the answer this time.
Yes, the Padres over 3 days in Phoenix won a series. They lost a starting pitcher, and they acquired a two-time batting champion in Luis Arraez. And I think I'd like to start there. This is a deal that, you know, they've been linked to him for months in the press. He slots right in as a DH slash second baseman type. How did this deal come together? And Kevin, where does he fit in the field? Because we know that he's going to be batting at the top of the lineup.
Well, evidently, while shopping for pitching, you know, AJ Preller, who is always on the phone, if you see him, it's not always with baseball people, you know, he's got other stuff going on, but family and friends, but generally just kibitzing about baseball and with baseball people. And hey, what about this guy? What about this guy? What about this guy? And you know what? Eventually, sometimes, often, more often than others, other GMs, that is, something comes to it. And all of a sudden, because it was sudden in the end, Luis Arraez is a Padre on, was that May 3rd? And that is early for such a blockbuster. And I say blockbuster because we're talking about a two-time batting champion. We're talking about a guy who changes the lineup. It's big. And the logic behind it is, oh, well, actually, you end up saving money because the Marlins are covering, you know, 90% of the salary. And you added a guy at the top of your lineup who gets on at a 40% clip. So that's pretty good. We can break down Luis Arraez. You know, there's a lot of people talking about his one-dimensional. I think we saw yesterday there's some maybe range limitations at second base. You know what? We can kind of – I remember growing up and people talking about a lot of things with Tony Gwynn too.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And he's going to hate, I think they say.
Right, right. And I think that – you know what? He has, even if he has just one elite skill, it's an elite skill, right? AJ Preller, we've talked about this for years, Kevin. AJ Preller prizes more than anything loud tool, right? He loves loud tools. And this guy's bat speaks loud and clear. They call him the sprinkler because of his ability to spray balls all over the field. We saw, I think, Saturday night. He gets hits in his first four at bats. Just incredible bat control, a real feel for the strike zone, somebody who I think changes this lineup instantly.
A part of his feel for the strike zone is it's okay to hit balls out of the strike zone.
Yes.
If you're going to get hits, because at least two, I think more of his five hits so far have been on pitches out of the strike zone, but he still is the personification of hit it where it's pitched, hit it where they ain't. I mean, right. It's incredible. And you know, it's really neat. I'm in the process. I got some notes here on another screen. I'm watching some of his at bats. Cause I feel like I should probably write about his unique skill. And I was just thinking like, what if you had only Luis Arraez on your team? How could it not work? Oh, well, first off, there is only one Luis Arraez right now.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's really neat. It can be overplayed, right? That when you do comparisons, and I will always push back on comparisons, always, because we are too quick to compare. We're too quick to do everything now.
Yeah.
But we're too quick to compare. But you can't help but say, wow, this guy reminds me of Tony Gwynn.
Yeah. And you know who else is saying that? I mean, Tony Gwynn Jr. is saying that too. You know.
Very graciously, by the way.
Yes.
Because, yes. You know, anybody who watched his dad play, there are some differences. And I always say this, and I'm not saying Luis Arraez is a future Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. but we throw around this term future Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. You know what the difference between a future Hall of Famer is and a Hall of Famer? One of them's in the Hall of Fame, and the other one probably ain't going there because we throw that word around too much.
Right. No, you're right. Let's talk a little bit about what the Padres gave up. Four total players, correct?
Yeah.
You look at Woosuck Go, who was in Double-A. Jacob Marcy, who is the MVP of the Arizona Fall League, was in camp for much of camp, right? Was in big league camp for a while. And then you've got two more.
Kevin. Ethan Martorella.
Thank you. Ethan Martorella, the last one?
I don't know, because why don't we have Jeff Sanders on here? I thought you were going to do this. I didn't know we were going here. It's actually Dylan Head, the number one draft pick from 2023.
Thank you, Kevin. Yes. Thank you, Kevin. I don't know why.
Centerpiece of the deal, right? Yes. There's other guys, basically everyone else in that deal is closer to the major leagues.
Right.
But what the Marlins are hoping is that eventually this kid is, you know, the Padres' number six prospect, that this kid is like a cornerstone of their franchise.
Can I sound like a hater here for a minute? Just because, Kevin, the Marlins are doing what a young Ryan Finley saw the Padres do, right? You're selling off parts for lottery tickets and hoping that one of those lottery tickets hits. And how hard must it be to work for that franchise, to play for that franchise, to be a fan of that franchise, when this seems to be what they do?
It's not hard to be a fan of that, or for many people to be a fan of that franchise, because there aren't many fans of that franchise. And I don't mean to belittle that. Like, obviously there are hardcore fans of the Marlins.
Sure.
But if you go there and you see the crowds of 9,000, and you know, when the Padres are there, at least, and I see that their best crowds, the Padres, Yankees, you know, Mets, Dodgers, it's half full, if not more, of other teams' fans, especially if you've got a heavy Dominican presence on your team, then that's just the way that it's going to be. I've been there a couple times when they're celebrating something. One time it was, I think it was last year? Yeah, it would have been the 20th anniversary of the 2003 World Series, right? I think it was another time it was a celebration of both, right? And if you have two World Series champions, then you can celebrate them, right?
Right.
But what you're doing is, it's a constant lightning in a bottle. And kudos. I know there, Ryan, you could speak to this, having grown up in San Diego and being a hardcore Padres fan for so much of your life. That would you trade two World Series titles for sucking the rest of the time, or almost all the rest of the time? This is a dire version of that. They went to the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know,
you blow it all up. What surprised me, and I think what really pushes this trade in the Padres' favor even more so, was the Marlins' willingness to eat all but the league minimum of Luis Arraez's contract. This means that the Padres still have some money left to make more moves if they feel like they need pitching, and it looks like they will, or an outfielder or whatever. This is not something that we've seen the Padres really take advantage of over the years. Usually they're the ones paying Eric Hosmer through whatever the year is to get him off the roster. I thought that that was a pleasant twist waking up on Saturday and seeing that.
Well, I mean, my goodness, yes. Incredible. Now, what it makes you think, and we don't have to think about it now. Look, probably he's got enough issues right now, but it makes you think, when he's making $12 to $15 million next year, will Luis Arraez, you know, is he a rental for, you know, 100 and what they hope is like 45 games or whatever it is, you know? Because, you know, that's what the Marlins did, right? They'd already budgeted that money this year. And what they did was say, okay, as we're rebuilding, we just took this off the books in his final year of arbitration.
Right. Right. And in exchange, they probably got a better prospect haul than they would have gotten had the Padres just agreed to pay all of Luis Arraez's contract.
And don't get sidetracked by this, folks, but, you know, this is how AJ Preller has to think, and then to his bosses, and have everybody think, is, we can trade this guy. Now, it's not saying we will, but like, we can trade this guy if we need to somehow make all the, look at what Juan Soto, and I will say this, like, that's always been the case. When they made all the moves in 15, they were talking internally about, we will probably move these guys no matter what happens, right?
Right.
Or we can move such and such guy.
Right.
You get Juan Soto, it's three pennant races, but we also can move him, you know, before he's done, and get something for him. And now it's Luis Arraez. No one has said this right now, but you can move Luis Arraez if you need to.
Right. Saw him play second yesterday after DHing on Saturday. I know that you've written at length about this, Kevin, but explain a little bit more sort of where he fits in terms of positionally for them.
Yeah, well, they've talked about playing him at third left field. I think that'll be, we'll see. Right now, they're just trying to teach him all their signs and where to play, you know, in their system and you know, get him acclimated to them. But he's a second baseman, first baseman, DH, right? Mm-hmm. And then what that is this rotation of guys. You can give Manny, obviously, now while he's still getting the elbow back, you know, in shape and getting endurance there. You can have him DH, and then you can I think they would still, it sounds like, put Tyler Wade at third. And so then I guess I'm not sure what happens at that point, because for some reason they wouldn't move Ha-Sung Kim over to third, which they could do, and then Xander over to short. And but anyway, but you're just like yesterday, Xander Bogaerts is the DH, right? Let's see, it's all righties, I believe, this series. And so I'm not sure exactly how it's going to work. But it's basically a rotation of regulars at DH. You now have on your bench a regular basically every day.
Right.
Right. Like you have somebody available to come off the bench almost every day that is a regular. Yesterday it was Luis Camposano. You had Higashioka in there, and they got Donovan Solano now. So they've got like Jose Azokar, your outfielder. You've got Tyler Wade, your infield utility guy. You've got Solano, your pinch hit kind of specialist, can come in and play over on the right side. And you've got Kyle Higashioka, your backup catcher who catches the knuckleballer. That poor guy, by the way, for goodness sake, can we just call him like KPBs or no, KWPs, like knuckleball wild pitches instead of pass balls? Because that poor guy, like, he's just going to be metrically the worst catcher in the league this year.
Yeah, this is, I think, a good opportunity to talk about the pitching. Matt Waldron struggled yesterday, said, hey, you know, he said it was the worst outing he'd had since he's been here.
He said this year, I said since he's been here, just to be clear, Ryan.
Okay. But he's, when a knuckleballer goes south, the whole thing springs a leak, it seems to me, because all of a sudden you've got the catcher chasing down knuckleballs. You've got teams running at will when they see that a knuckleball is coming. I think that this is a guy, Kevin, who's living on a very small margin right now, or a very narrow margin, because it's a handful even when the knuckleball is working, right? So
some of the opposing teams have even talked about it. Like, he had a nice outing against the Giants, I believe. It was the Giants. And they started to get to him at the end a little bit, and they talked about, now we've seen him, right?
Right.
And so when he's on, man, it's fun to watch, and it has been effective. Let's be clear. Like, he's been a decent number five starter with a little bit more run support. This is often how it goes, right? Like, the pitcher you need to support the most, right. you don't. You could borrow some from Michael King. But, yeah, and I don't know exactly how to explain it or crystallize my thoughts, which is a really good trait to have when you're in communications business. But it feels like they're sort of stuck there, right? Like, because Randy Vasquez hasn't been very effective. And, of course, we'll get into that, because Randy Vasquez is now going to – most
in the rotation
tomorrow in Chicago because Joe Musgrove went on the IL. But it's like, where do you go? And then, like, well, Johnny Brito possibly could have started, gotten even more stretched out. So he was working with Vasquez on Tuesday so that maybe Brito's ready to then step in because he's been pretty good. But now Brito had to pitch yesterday because Walden wasn't good. It just feels like, and then they've got these young guys that they're excited about down at Double A and stuff, but they're not ready quite yet. Like, yeah, and it's been really bad, Ryan, like, in terms of they're as inconsistent as, say, Musgrove, Darvish have been, even King, they're much better when they're top four pitch, right?
Yeah.
They're not so good, as in terrible, their record when Vasquez and Waldron pitch, because even in some of Waldron's good starts, they haven't scored at all.
Right.
So, yeah. It's a thing, and it has been. And then every time we talk about it, right? And I'm going to make a big deal out of it. Then the starting pitchers go on a 4 or 5 day bender where they're really good, and you go, okay. And then boom, we're back.
Right. And you look through the bullpen at guys who could step in and maybe slot into the rotation, you know, even somebody like Adrian Morahone. But man, he has been so good in the role that he's had. Yep. You almost don't want to jinx it. You almost just say, hey, do you? Like, we found this role for you. You just stay there.
We got you here. You're right. And he's, you know, and now you're talking about stretching guys out in the middle of the season. And it really seems like Adrian is, it really seems like Adrian is doing well here. Give you, you know, 3 to maybe 6 outs if he's highly efficient, which he's going to get his strikeouts. So, but yeah, that is exactly what it seems like. But Brito, I believe, he didn't pitch for a long time. I think he was an option to go, maybe start, and he had to go yesterday. That doesn't mean that that can't still happen, but yeah, it's a perilous situation right now.
Yes. Yes.
You want to know how much so between my game story and my Padres daily today, I really kind of dove into the difference between when the starters are good and bad. Now you can also, as I noted in the Padres daily, say, duh, like every team, there's not a team in baseball this year. I looked at them all and probably not in the history of baseball because that the starters are worse when their team goes on to win. Right. Like Yu Darvish, who's starting the night, allowed 4 runs in 3 innings against the Cubs the last time he faced them on April 8th. Well, that's because the Padres came back and scored 7 runs in the 8th inning and won 9-8. That's not what happens. But the disparity between when the Padres starting pitchers are good, like they and when they're bad, it's like pretty bad, like down 4-5, 6-0 early. Right. Or 6-1 or 6-2, and you just can't do that.
Nope. The reason we're talking about Randy Vasquez at all is because Joe Musgrove was put on the IL yesterday. When I hear that it's tendonitis or even elbow adjacent, and they say it's precautionary, big flashing red lights go on. In my head, this is a franchise, and maybe it's unfairly so. Precautionary things have turned into very serious things over the years. And serious things have been called precautionary.
That's fair.
Give me reason to believe that this is just precautionary, Kevin.
That's fair, but we don't watch other teams as much as we watch the Padres. And we don't see how often precautionary turns into such and such. And then what we tend to do is we tend to not notice when they say it's precautionary and it turned out to be precautionary.
Right.
So, but that is fair because, there have been quite a few to good players, right? The evidence, when you ask what's reason to believe it's precautionary, he kept working this week. He had a really good start last time where the metrics were good. Not only was it a good start, like it was good all around. I don't see how we aren't worried until we find out Joe went back to San Diego and see a doctor. And if they decide that there needs to be imaging or something, I don't see how we're not a little bit on edge until we find out that he's okay.
Right.
Because he says he's going to start throwing by the end of the week. He said take 3 or 4 days off. So if he is, then right on.
Right. And again, they were, an abundance of caution when they put Yu Darvish on the IL earlier this year. And it turned out to just be that, right?
Hey, go get one of the Marlins, young pitchers. Not a problem.
But this puts the Padres back. And again, we're going to talk about the Cubs here in a minute. But this puts the Padres back. If Joe Musgrove's out for any extended period of time, this puts them back into the situation that they were in late March, which is not nearly enough starting pitching to cover, right? I mean, at that point, you got to go get somebody.
You would think and the reason that I'm like, obviously aggressive with Luis Arraez. I mean, like saying, hey, here's the thing. And I explained this in the Padres Daily the day after the Arraez trade. They felt they had a good team last year, but they also started to kind of bump up. They'd made some decisions, Matt Carpenter, they'd made some decisions that had kind of put them over the budget that they'd originally set, between Peter and AJ, they kind of got, a little crazy there. And so they thought they had a good team, but in hindsight, it wasn't good enough. We didn't do everything we could to make that lineup deep enough. Right. And so there's a lesson in that. And so I think that colors going to get Luis Arraez on May 3rd to get him for the whole time, because you know what? We're kind of hovering around 500. Man, look at us when we have these big innings and we're stringing hits together. And I love the approach, but look, boom, let's go get this guy. So yeah, I would think that not going to wait around too long if things are looking bad, because like I said, like, they're not giving their team a chance to win far too often.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. And you know what? Games like Sundays happen during the course of a long baseball season. I don't think that that's necessarily the latest in a series of games like that. They just sort of, you're playing in that bandbox on that day.
You crushed. If you're looking at this from the Diamondback side, that's what you need to do when your team gets beat like that. Mm-hmm. The Padres had outscored them 20-2.
Right.
Corbin Carroll's in a horrible slump. I think Christian Walker been pretty good, but not great. There's a couple other guys there that have just been Lourdes Gurriel or Jr. And eventually they're going to get hot. And, you know, they're talking amongst themselves too. Like, have some freaking pride.
Yeah,
we're gonna get swept again here. I think the Dodgers have just been in there and crushed them. Like, is this terrible homestand? They're coming off a World Series. Like, I'm not saying they were like, I'm not saying it happened that they were like, we gotta win this game. But like, you know,
yeah, absolutely. And again, they're going against the Padres' fifth starter on a day when he clearly doesn't have it. You know, I mean, it was that sort of thing happens. But you're right, like you had said it. The issue with this team, the trend that you're concerned about is on the days when they don't score, right? It's on the days when, you know, you could get a quality start from your starting pitcher and still lose the game.
I want to talk – well, that's what you would be concerned about, but they're 11-3 in quality starts this year. Right. And last year, I've had a chart in the daily today. They ended up with a decent record. It was still a good 7 percentage points lower than the league average. You win three quarters of your quality starts generally, playoff teams do anyway, but that's because they went 8-1 in their final nine, right? Like when the season was over and they went 14-2 during that 14-2 stretch, they got 9 quality starts at the end of last season. They won 8 of them. So think about that. They were something like, what was it? 51-24 at the end of the year in quality starts. That means they were 43-23, which is terrible. In quality starts. That, like, you look back and that's just one of those glaring things last year. They didn't take advantage of good pitching. Well, now they're not taking advantage of decent hitting sometimes. Yeah. Like, it just, I'm sorry. Like, Jurickson Profar is the only guy who's been honest enough to say it. But, like, when you're down early all the time, it wears on you. You can't keep coming back. And that's why it's one of those things when you're a young reporter and players tell you something and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, they must know. And now it's like, no, guys, like, you know what? I don't have your talent. I might not even know as much baseball as you, but I've been around a long time, guys. So earlier this year, when I'm saying to them, like, hey, you know, this is great, the comebacks and all, but like, you can't be counting on that. Oh no, we can come back. Oh, okay.
Right.
And then, you know, serves them right. Yes. Get Toronto come in here, gets them down. You know, Phillies come in, get them down. Like, you can't keep coming back all the time.
Right. And similarly, you can't say it's important to get off to a good start and then get off to a bad start and then downplay a bad start. I don't think that they're off to a bad start. They're in second place in their division. They've had really good stretches, but at some point it needs to be more consistent. They can't keep pulling their butts out of the fire every night.
Think about yourself, that how it goes when you're just banging your head against the wall. And even if you're just like really committed to this thing, right? But you just can't stop, right? I don't know, you know, Ryan, I don't know what it is. You know, is it drinking? Is it food? No, you get frustrated. I'm telling you, I have seen this so many times this year where I'm actually kind of impressed. And I know it's not a win or, you know, whatever, but like, I got to watch this team every game. So I'm always looking for trends. Last year, they're down by 2 or 3 runs. You could almost count on it. One hit over the last 4 innings, you know, it was over. This year, even in those games they haven't come back, I could count 2-3 fingers probably. Mm-hmm. The amount of times when they're down and there's no fight in the results show there's no fight. I'm against saying there's no fight because I'm not in the dugout. I'm not in their brains. But they will still, even yesterday, they were getting hits. They were having good at bats, even though that they were down by 7, and especially when they were down by 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. So like, but eventually those hitters are just going to be like, doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, you can't. And I think I use this analogy maybe in our last episode, not to mix my sports metaphors, but it's like you can't be pressing and trapping every game, right? It's going to tire you out. It's going to tire you out. And even if it works, it's not sustainable over the course of a long season.
Yep. Absolutely. The basketball game is where the team that's down by 14 comes back and makes it a 2-point game or whatever. They end up losing by 14 because they.
Right.
They got gas doing the comeback. So that's what this offense reminds me of now.
Yes, absolutely. Padres, Cubs. Are the Cubs good, Kevin? I'm looking.
Their pitching's incredible.
Their pitching has been incredible. And again, this isn't – I mean, well, let's start, I guess. Justin Steele against Yu Darvish in game 1. Steele has a 1.93 ERA. He's just coming off the IL.
Yeah, he pitched, what, 4 2/3 opening day, a hamstring injury. This is him coming. He has not pitched since then.
Right. Game two, Randy Vasquez versus Shota Imanaga, who is, oh my God, incredible.
Yep.
I mean, 5-0, 0.78 ERA, reigning NL Rookie of the Month, 35-4 strikeout to walk ratio. Filthy. Have you had a chance to see him pitch at all this year?
Just the highlights, but my understanding, yes, he's everything, if not more, than people thought that he would be. They thought he'd be good, but he's really, really good. And, you know, kind of a typical, got the split. It's pretty, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure the Padres are not.
Game three, Dylan Cease pitching against the team that drafted him. People forget the Cubs, not the White Sox, drafted Dylan Cease. He's taking on Haylen Wesneski, 2-0, 0.54 ERA. A guy who I may just be learning about right now, but my goodness.
He's the he's kind of the Michael King of the, you know, like the Yankees version of Michael King. He's a reliever. He's a starter. I will say this, that what I remember, and I was surprised to look back and see that it was only 5 innings, 1 run. He pitched, I think it was the middle game. Might've been the last game. Padres won the middle game, but it was the last game here at Wrigley last year. Mm-hmm. And I just remember him shoving. I mean, the Padres were helpless against him last year here. So not sure. I can't remember why did he go 5-1. Maybe it was a lot of pitches or something. But he was really good.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be
a heck of a if you remember. I think he ended up 5th in the Cy Young voting or something like that.
Yeah.
But if you remember, all the way along into September.
It was his to lose. Yeah, it was his to lose. I mean, I think he was like the favorite heading into – at least August, and Blake Snell caught
because
him
he had more innings, all that. Yeah. People were still talking about Snell and the 5 and 6 and all that. Yes.
Every show I try to put you on the spot. This is a little bit different. Take me into their clubhouse as they are learning about Luis Arraez. What does the addition of a player like this mean for a clubhouse?
Well, funny thing is that they learned in the dugout throughout the game, different guys at different times during the game. I believe them, right? You got some details about learning about it after the game, in the middle of the game. But to me, the standout thing was, okay, here, this guy is incredible at getting on base. This is going to create more opportunities. And this, like, this should be what kind of takes away the excuse. Kind of like, I don't know how else to say it. Like, I mean, I'm trying to think about how some guys phrased it, but like, yeah, okay. This isn't maybe the magnitude of Juan Soto because of the power and the stardom, but and I'll tell you, Jurickson Profar was ecstatic. It was fine. Batting leadoff, and he was doing well, but that's not where he wanted to be and not where he thinks he's best suited. So what they felt like is, wow, this gave us a leadoff hitter who's going to get on at this time. It was so early. I think it was probably more shock than like, okay, Juan Soto was anticipated. Juan Soto was like, we need something. We are struggling. What was I thought good about this, and we'll see if it turns out to matter at all, but what I thought was good about this is the Padres offense has actually been doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now they added this guy who can get on base and does these things that will make them even better. It wasn't a case of, oh, we're desperate. Oh, we're doing terrible. We got to add this. And oh, we got this singles hitter. It was, oh, wow. What an incredible compliment to what we're doing. And one thing when they have done well, some of their best games, they're not great with runners in scoring position, but they got like 15 runners in scoring position. And eventually, you know, 3 hits with runners in scoring position, if one's a double and, you know, like that can give you 5 runs, you know?
Sure. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. I also think, too, that the fact that they were able to add him without giving up anybody who could reasonably be expected to contribute to this year's team, except for maybe Woo Suk Kyo. Right? I mean, we didn't think Marcy was going to be a big leaguer at any point this year, did we?
Maybe at some point, but he certainly has not earned his way here this year. He's not doing well.
Right.
So,
right.
But at some point, perhaps, not if things were going well for the Padres.
Right.
So I think this is, this has the ability to be exciting. At this point, what they've done is, you know, remember that they hit the grand slam, Brandon Drury hit the grand slam, and it was like, oh yeah, man, feel bad for other pitchers. Well, You know, Luis Arraez was 1-for-5 yesterday. You know, right. we'll just take this as it comes, Ryan. We'll just take this as it comes. It wasn't, you know, I'm excited. I love watching like guys that have a particular talent, be that, hey, this guy's a great fielder, whatever. Right. Like, but we'll just take this as it comes. This is going to be a tough series.
Yes. But there's no arguing that this is a better Major League Baseball team than it was Friday.
Absolutely, how you would put a guy at the top who can do what he does, and so I'm looking forward to what happens over the next few weeks to see how they respond to that, right? Like,
yes,
you know, he was on second again yesterday and no one drove him in. The game was out of hand by then, but I'm not saying they should drive him in every time, that's not what happens, but like, if this is going to be that spark plug, which he was on Saturday night, that's for sure, then more opportunities should result in more runs.
Right. And the Padres will need him this week because it's 3 in Chicago and then 3 against the Dodgers at Petco Park. So buckle
up. This is a heck of a month right here. Three, and then what is it, the Rockies after that they finish up with that homestand? But Rockies, it's Atlanta and the back to the Reds.
It's Atlanta, Reds, and then Yankees.
Yeah. The heck of a month. Well,
absolutely. And it all starts Monday afternoon, San Diego time, 4:40 p.m. Padres, Cubs. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.